So you just need two more people. We have Lee, Derek, or Laura who can show up.
Should I log in on my phone too and count as two? Would that be helpful?
Oh no, we lost Ed.
Probably a connection issue.
Hello, everyone. Kira, do we have any RSVPs for anyone who's cannot attend?
So I have Gwen who wanted to extend her LOA.
We actually might put Gwen back on membership after all, so that's probably actually pretty convenient because one of the two people who are going to be interviewed this Thursday has already expressed a lot of interest in joining this committee specifically.
Oh,
And
okay.
that could balance it out. Of course, it'd have to be accepted by membership, but I don't see that necessarily being a problem. So we might as well give people what they initially asked for, if that's the case. It might be. Or Ed. I guess either one of them could go back. But Ed already has told me that he doesn't mind being on this committee. I guess it's just has to figure out the connection issues. So we didn't hear anything from Derek or Laura or
No.
Paul.
Is Paul on this committee as well? Oh, okay.
Ish.
Yeah.
I mean, Paul was one of those folks who did not respond to my ask for a committee choice, so I just kept him the same. I should have asked you to pause the recording. I don't want to ever be construed as shit talking during a recorded meeting. That was the fakest laugh I just gave. Wow. Thank you for the introduction, Thomas. I will connect. I'll email
Oh,
back
great.
to that person. When it rains, it pours. We have two people who are being interviewed this Thursday. We have another person, if her application is approved, to be interviewed next month. And if this is another one, that's four people who might be coming on within the next 2 months, which is fabulous.
That is good. And Franco is a good fit, so I'll just leave it at that.
I'm gonna, well, let's give it another minute and I'll email Laura and Derek to ask if they are joined. Is there anyone else I'm missing? Is it just Laura and Derek?
And Lee, but I didn't get an RSVP from either of those three.
Okay, I'll just send them a harassing email right now. Derek, no. All right, we'll see what we see. All good. Ed's there. So, until, of course, new co-chair is elected, that means you're still on deck, Richard, as the co-chair of this committee. And I'm not sure if you even want to convene a vote to replace you at this point, since it looks like the only two folks are Ed and Thomas, unless, of course, they are interested in becoming co-chairs of this committee. So we should probably start.
Okay. Hi everyone. We'll start with the introductions and welcome, and I'll just steer it around the group if I could, just for convenience. Hi, I'm Richard, and I'm co-chair of the community engagement meeting and council co-chair, and I'll pass to Ed Chitty.
Ed Chitty, new member to the group.
Welcome, Ed. Thomas.
Thomas Noble, they, them pronouns, government co-chair.
Kira.
Hi everyone, Kira, council staff.
Maria.
Hello, Maria Lacayo, she, her, and I'm with HIV Health Services.
Hi, Maria. Stephen.
Steven Spano, the HCAP staff attorney at the AIDS Legal Referral Panel. Is he, him, or they, them pronouns?
Hi, Stephen. And
Dan.
Mark.
Mark, council staff, Mark Molnar.
Okay, everyone, welcome. So we didn't have a meeting last month, so I see here review. Well, we can review today's agenda if we could throw that up.
Can everyone see that?
Yep, HCAP review, committee mission review, critical co-chair election vote, which we might put off. We're talking needs assessment COLA update and a needs assessment target vote. We'll talk about that down the line, but anyone see anything they'd like to change or amend? Okay, seeing none, that's approved by consensus. Thank you, Kira.
Sorry, are we? We're not voting on it, right? We're just.
No,
We're
I
gonna
think it's going to
push
be.
that off, right, Mark?
It's as far as the agenda, if that's what you were asking about, Thomas, since we don't have quorum, it's just approved by consensus under the idea of it being a recommendation rather than an actual like consensus motion approval.
Thanks.
Doesn't really become an issue unless we are voting on something that like funding or something like that we actually cannot consider it a motion. But something as light as agenda review, I think it's fine to go on as a consensus leading to a recommendation rather than a motion.
Okay. Do we need to throw up November 1st agenda, Mark? We didn't have a meeting there.
These are the minutes from November 1st.
Oh, November. My bad. Would anyone like to amend or comment?
Looks good, Richard.
Okay, thank you, everyone. Do we have any announcements? No.
Just that,
Okay.
we have our first in-person subcommittee meeting in a very long while, membership this Thursday. Of course, all committees are open to all members, so if anyone would like to attend, including former members of membership for old time's sake, it is at 25 Van Ness, third floor, room 330A.
Stephen, you had something?
Yeah, quickly. So I will just announce that in lieu of Bill Hirsch, I am doing my very best to support advocacy efforts regarding the community's budget asks for this
Oh.
upcoming fiscal season. Bill informed me yesterday that it is typical after we meet with supervisors to try and meet with the Planning Council at their Affairs Committee, and so I will be, or a Steering Committee. So I will come to you to staff to try and help me set that up when the time is appropriate, and I'll keep the committee up to date on my efforts as well.
And so, Stephen, that's great. I'm glad that you've stepped in for that, I assume, with other members of Happen Leadership. So we actually have an annual update from happen, which, you know, it was in the past from Bill and from Lance. So if you want it to be from you and from some other member, including some other members from happen, that would be great. Let me just try to find when that is on the work plan for this year. I need to find the actual work plan first. Okay, there it is. Okay, so that is on the, oh, not till May. The May agenda for a budget advocacy update.
Yeah, and I'll be in contact with Laura on that as well. She's a co-chair of Happen now.
Great.
Lucky dog.
Thank you, Stephen. Thanks, everyone. Any other announcements? Okay, public comment. No? So, Stephen, you're back up again with the HCAP report.
Cool. So, I know that we didn't meet last week, and I did submit a report last month. A lot of that stuff has been resolved, and I cleaned up the report for this upcoming month. There's really only two cases that I kind of wanted to talk about to highlight. And of course, as always, I'll be available to discuss anything else that folks want to talk about. The first, actually, both of them are on page two of this report. So if you want to scroll down, the first is an issue with dental services. Now, what's interesting is this has actually been on the report for quite a while. And the reason I wanted to report on it is because this is exactly one of the things that like is probably entirely avoidable somehow, but can really result in a rupture, an unresolvable rupture. You know, the system lost, you know, our public system lost a consumer over this issue. It became very, very stressful. And they were like, Stephen, I don't want to deal with it. They can't respond. They haven't gotten back to me. It nearly affected the client's credit score. I'm done. You know, and the client left and found another provider in private practice. And it is coming out of pocket to do that. So kind of an unfortunate resolution. I did ask the client if they wanted to move forward with a grievance, just to let the service provider know of that rupture, and they were like, yeah, whatever. So it's not necessarily a priority for the client. I think they're at this point kind of ready to get rid of it, but it seems unfortunate, and it seems like a totally avoidable issue that resulted in a disconnect from the system of care. The next is the one below that, and this I just kind of wanted to highlight.
Before you go on, I wonder, can I ask a question about that?
Well, certainly.
So this is completely serious as far as it impacted a client, but also as the potential ramifications as for other clients, and perhaps even a precedent being set of non-communication leading to, you know, all the different challenges that you express. So I think this is important that this issue be portrayed to the service provider's program manager. I mean, this is something that they should definitely be aware of to intercede. If there's what I'm seeing here that's most problematic is that there has not been, maybe even still, any communication from the service provider. And so that's something the program manager will need to intercede on. That's something that is related directly to service delivery, best practices, you know, being client-centered, like all the things. So I don't know if that's going to come from you. I assume it would, but they should definitely be notified, whoever that program manager might be.
Yeah, most certainly. When you say program manager, you mean program manager at DPH?
Yes. So I would connect with Maria or Bill or another member of HHS and ask their guidance on, like, well, who should you talk to who's going to have the most impact in connecting with the service provider?
Yeah.
Thank you. I did hear it. Thank you for saying that, Mark. And yes, follow up with myself and Bill, and I'll let him know as well. Since I don't think he's not on the meeting, but I'll let him know. Thank you.
Yeah. The next is I wanted to highlight because it does.
Well, Stephen, sorry, I had my hand up for a second.
I'm sorry.
I also wanted to ask something about that. So what happens here? That was just a rogue service provider, and they're going to go unpunished, so to speak. Even though it's been resolved, they're not answering you back, or can they be put on a list of like non like they're not good to use, or what's the ramifications for this service provider?
Well, you know, I mean the goal of HCAP is not punitive, or you know, I have no authority to hold the service provider accountable. What I can do is support the client through the grievance process. On the one hand, the issue was resolved, right? Because the billing department communicated, you know, to the collection agency communicated to the client, and the client should have, you know, should feel like it's resolved at that point. But simply asking for a final statement to show that the account is balanced, that is something that, you know, I don't understand why it can't be done. If anybody were to request, you know, a final letter from us just saying, hey, can you send me an email saying our case is closed? I don't understand why that is so difficult, right? There may be some challenge that I'm not seeing, right? There's, as far as, you know, our agency is concerned, there's not a whole lot of bureaucracy. It may be very different at other service providers. And, you know, for all I know, Salesforce is just fidgety like that. I don't know. But without a conversation, I don't even have, you know, nobody responded. Nobody from the billing department even got back to us. You know, I had my law clerk contacting them once a week, and that's just, I don't know, kind of not cool. And it's unfortunate, because a simple letter, the client would have probably said, okay, no harm, no foul. I got everything I've done. I'm fine. Let me make my appointment for next year or whatever, my next cleaning appointment. But instead, it's like, do I really want to deal with this every time I come to the dentist? Like, not only am I going to get my teeth drilled, but I'm also going to like jeopardize my credit score. You know, it doesn't feel good, and it's not. Yeah. So I think, Richard, to answer your question more directly, there will be no, from my end, the follow-up will be exactly what we just talked about, which is speaking with the program director at DPH and following up with a kind of a final letter to the agency, to the service provider, letting them know, like, you know, this was really unfortunate, and you lost a good patient, you know, and
thanks, Stephen.
Yeah. I don't want to take too much time on this. The only reason I wanted to highlight it is because it does illustrate a unique issue for my desk, where, you know, a client was receiving food services, and is not allowed, you know, there are different delivery models. I have confirmed that the client is still able to obtain food services using an alternative method. You know, so we found an alternative for them to get food services. But the unfortunate thing about this service provider is they are also housed in a building where there are a couple of other service providers with whom the client interacts, including their primary care provider. So an issue like this, where I was working with a client on one particular issue with regard to obtaining their food services, also required me to check in with the other service providers that they're working with to figure out alternatives for how to get the client connected, you know, to their primary care provider, their psychosocial support services. Those are all things that I'm still working on, and they're kind of ancillary to the issue, but a unique one for me, where, you know, service providers are sharing office space, and if, you know, if the client is terminated or has a barrier to one of the services, it could result in barriers to the others. To my knowledge, at this point, the client has not been denied any services, and the service providers have been working very hard to make sure that's true, including the service provider involved in the dispute. So that's a success as far as I'm concerned, although an unfortunate situation. And with that, I'll just turn it over and see if anybody has any questions.
Thomas.
So, I don't know how to say this and why I'm saying it, but just the first time I kind of experienced something like this, I kind of got all fired up and was like, let's bring him down. And then as I settled a little bit, I realized that the number of service providers available is pretty small. And the amount of funds that they're getting is pretty small as well. So it's never, I'm not excusing poor behavior and not professionalism. But at the same time, we don't have as many options as I thought we would with regards to putting these contracts out to bid. So if that helps with a little bit of the context, we still want to make sure that people get the highest quality services. But I just didn't think we thought we had access to more levers than we actually do.
It is unfortunate that there aren't other options, for example, for food, especially if there's not a surrogate available. That's definitely unfortunate. But I also can see just a real hands tied kind of situation here, right? Like if someone has a restraining order filed against them, it was most likely due to some form of harassing or violent behavior. And it's hard to work around that other than, okay, you're gonna have to find another service provider. The problem is although there are other primary care providers, there are limited psychosocial support options and even more limited food options. So that client's really in a bind, but once the legal system has been a part of it, I think there's just very little that Stephen actually even could do at that point, other than being hopeful that the primary care provider can come up with alternates.
That actually has been the case so far. And even across the board, even the folks from the service provider's office that were involved in the dispute, don't want to see anybody go without food, right?
Of course.
And they have bent over backwards to make sure that the client, now, if the restraining order is violated, I may not be able to maintain that, that has to be made clear to the client. This really does show, I think, a success on the part of the system of care. Like our service providers really do want to make sure folks are taking care of their basic needs.
Absolutely.
Yeah, just as a side note, back in the day, because of consequences of my behavior, I was restrained from going inside of Project Open Hand. And I was a client for several years at the time, but they worked it out so they didn't want to deny me food. Someone could shop for me and bring it down to the sidewalk. But that lasted for almost a year and a half. But yeah, there's consequences to our behavior sometimes. But like you said, service providers, especially with food, they didn't want to see that denied. So they worked with my representative. Anyways, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that, Tom. All right, Richard.
So Stephen, is that it for HCAP?
Yeah, unless there's other questions, I'm always available, of course.
So I know we have one new committee member. I'd love to just check in with Ed about if that whole agenda item and our conversation made sense. As it's something I'll be going over when I do the mission review, but just wanted to know your reaction to that. All was that all pretty clear about what was just went on? Okay. Looks cold out. Hope you're
thanks,
okay,
Mark. And before we move on to the committee mission review, I'd like to welcome Lee Jewell. He joined us with his tardy ass.
Oh my god!
I'm sorry. Are we taped? I'm sorry.
Oh my god!
The usually punctual Lee Jewell is with us. Welcome, Lee. Welcome.
Thank you,
tardy ass.
It's all about reframing.
Lee's a working man, so just lay
yeah,
off.
Yeah, lay off. Better late than never.
Well, with not the really. Whole image behind you, I couldn't resist.
All right. I guess I'm up next, right? Is it mission review? Yeah. Let me look at the agenda.
Yes.
Yes, it is. Okay. And I'll speak towards the elections next as well. But let's start with mission review very quick, hopefully. Let me share screen. I'm going to pull up the agenda that we just saw. and focus on the mission. So you'll see here the mission is to be responsible for educating the council on specific underserved communities and high-risk populations and ongoing and emerging issues for people living with HIV and at highest risk for HIV. You know, that's pretty straightforward, right? We're supposed to be the recipient of information about and coming from the community. So we get that in two different ways. We get that through our HCAP report, and then we get that through our needs assessments and COLAs. As far as the education process, you know, there isn't much that goes from HCAP to the full council from this committee. Stephen himself provides an annual update, which we'll be getting in the next couple months. But this committee itself doesn't act on any HCAP reports. It simply receives that information and, when necessary or when appropriate, advises. So there's nothing, no real linkage in that way as far as education goes. The education is solely around the needs assessment and the COLAs. As you all know, this committee does actually choose the needs assessment and COLAs targets, sometimes based on suggestions from council staff, but most often based on a group discussion and always an ending vote for all of those. And then, of course, council staff, sometimes with help from council members, enacts the COLAs and needs assessments and then provides the report to the council. And so thus the council is educated on the specific needs of underserved communities. So that's essentially community engagement. It functions as a parallel to council affairs, even though what they actually do is quite different. Community engagement is specifically about the consumers of care, while council affairs is much more about the service providers and government entities. Any questions about what we do here in our mission, in particular from our newest member? All right, and done.
Okay, thanks, Mark. And then
co-chair election. So I want to make it clear to Richard, who no longer wants to remain in this role, that what has happened in the past, and I don't want this to be like a gimme for the new committee, new and existing committee members as far as not stepping up to the plate, but I want to assure Richard that we don't force people to continue co-chair facilitation. We have no ability to force you, nor would we want to. It's a free country. And so if for some horrible, terrible reason, no one steps up to the plate, you know, if this committee completely shirks its responsibilities and does not elect a committee co-chair, council staff will facilitate. We've done it in the past and we'll do it in the future. And we will just simply have co-chair elections literally on every agenda until someone desires to actually fill that space. So please, Richard, rest assured this will be your last co-chair meeting as committee co-chair.
Well, Mark, if I may, I've been doing this a couple of years and things have just gotten a little busy. This isn't hard to do, like I said, but I just was going to step back. But if no one stepped up, I certainly don't feel comfortable with council staff stepping in. I would continue my role.
Okay, well, certainly no pressure, but it is certainly more desirable for council members to be the facilitators of these meetings, since we are not the council support is literally support, not council leadership.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like with the low attendance, I mean, the meeting was canceled last month and we've got low attendance again this month. So we just need to make sure that we have enough members present to be able to hold an actual vote.
All right. Looks like Thomas has their hand up.
So, Richard, I appreciate you kind of offering that, but being, I appreciate you offering that, but at the same time, I really would like encourage you to focus on school and other parts of your
being. Take care of yourself.
Yeah. So, Mark's got plenty of time on their hands, so I think we'd be good.
Yeah, literally just relaxing here all day long. Please. It wouldn't be me. I would probably just say, hey, Kira, what's up?
Like so many things these days.
Kira could co-facilitate this meeting with ease, confidence, and professionalism. I have absolutely no doubt.
My God.
Looks like Stephen has her hand up.
Well, yeah, I wanted to ask, so is attendance low at the other subcommittees as well? And is there any idea of what that might be due to? Is there any plan to go back to in-person for subcommittee meetings?
I don't know if that would actually increase attendance, but here's my perspective on that. So Council Affairs, no. Council Affairs has been fine. Re-elected one co-chair and elected a new co-chair in NA. Membership was like community engagement. There was not enough people to actually have a meeting in January. And so we'll see. This Thursday is, as I mentioned, like their first in-person meeting because there's two interviews. And I've been given assurance that we'll have quorum from a majority of people there. So let's see if they follow up. I also was given assurance from people in this committee and a couple of those folks who assured me are not here. So we shall see. It's hard for me to think of this as like an endemic problem because we're getting fine numbers over at full council and council affairs. It might just be like a tough start to the year. I don't know. I honestly just don't think that in person will increase the numbers based on wrangling cats to get in person for membership. All right. So with that said, we do have a co-chair election. So anyone, of course, can nominate themselves, someone else, or nominate for re-election our existing co-chairs. The floor is open.
Remind us who are the current. I know that
Richard and Derek are the current co-chairs. Of course, you could not nominate Derek if he's not here because he'd have to agree to the nomination. So he's out.
But we don't know if he would be interested in continuing.
No, we do not know. And so therefore, of course, if we continue on and if council staff has the honor of facilitating in the interim, you know, we can certainly ask Derek when he does appear at the next meeting.
So let's do this. Would it be okay if I facilitate the next meeting when we have an actual election and Derek's present? And so we get a better idea who might be willing to step up and have a more robust nominating process?
That would be absolutely fun, but I want to make sure I have this clear. You are offering to facilitate, but you are not nominating yourself as an actual committee co-chair.
Correct.
Or are you? Okay. Yeah, we can definitely do that next month. Give Richard a break. I do agree with, I really appreciate Richard's offer to continue on, but I also appreciate what Thomas said about, you know, we should not put ourselves in situations that we're going to be stretching ourselves to the limits.
Yeah, I agree.
Listen, everyone, Lee, I appreciate what everyone's saying, Thomas and Lee, but honestly, I don't like to quit on anyone. So if this can't be rectified today, I'll continue to be community engagement. But if we can include on every agenda an election, no, while we get people up to, and sooner or later, we're going to have the numbers and we can have an official vote soon, I hope. Until then, I don't like to quit on anything. It's not hard to do. I'll stay in this, but as long as we vote like almost every meeting.
Sure. I mean, I don't have a problem stepping up. I think you deserve a break. You should go ahead. It puts additional kind of impetus for us to make sure we get the election happening and the appropriate co-facilitators, you know, nominated and elected.
All right, so we're going to just punt this over to next month.
Fine. Yep. Till next month. Tell all your friends.
Well, hold it. Did we actually check with, I guess it's just you, Ed, if you're interested in.
And you.
Oh, yeah. No.
You know, I did open the floor for nominations and there was.
I wouldn't consider it an honor. Thanks.
Yeah. But, it was open and no one said anything. So I think was our answer there.
Ed, do you have any interest?
Ed is muted, but I feel like we're hearing his message.
Let me help out. I would be honored to accept as Ed Chitty.
I'm sure that's what I saw.
Ed, you're on mute, by the way.
No, thank you. I would like to attend. more than one meeting to see what's going on.
Makes sense.
I just
fair enough. I just wanted to make sure you weren't overlooked. That'd be we value you very greatly. So,
okay, so we'll put this over till next month. We'll continue from there. And so we can move now to needs assessment and COLA update, I believe.
Yeah, and I can take that. But Mark, did you want to do the COLA update first and then the needs assessment, going over the presentation itself?
I wonder if we should just actually do the needs assessment vote now first. So here's, as I mentioned, you know, the needs assessment target is officially chosen by this group. Sometimes council staff offers suggestions, and I would like now to be one of those moments where council staff offers a suggestion and to throw it out to the group and see what you all think. Now, this, of course, would be a recommendation because we don't have quorum, which would mean that if folks do agree with a suggestion at the council meeting itself, someone would have to move it and another person would have to second it rather than coming on the floor for a vote, if that makes sense. So with that said, you know, one of our outstanding COLA targets is the Black / African-American population from last year. We were, Karen and I were talking and planning on, like, let's make this happen. It's been hard to get that started because of lack of communication, but we all know that this is a thriving, and certainly, like, the numbers are there. This is a thriving community and a community with many challenges, and the numbers are there to actually have not just a COLA, but a full needs assessment. We have chosen this community as a past needs assessment, as we have with Latino, elders, trans communities, multiple different ones. It's okay to repeat, and in fact, we should repeat. It has been quite a number of years, I think, since we've had the Black / African-American population chosen as a needs assessment. So that will be council staff's recommendation, is let's expand the COLA target to our actual needs assessment target. How do folks feel about that?
I think it's a great idea. I've been at this for so long. The target communities for me are getting a little blurred.
Yeah, right.
I support the idea.
All right. Is anyone against this idea? Oh, it looks like Thomas has their hand up.
I don't think I'm against it. I just kind of keep reflecting on the 2023 data. And I think the unhoused component came up as well as a significant kind of population. I think around viral suppression specifically. Same time, I do feel like we have a lot of information on that group, so I could go either way.
We can always use more information on that group, and that could be a COLA target. You know, there's inherent challenges with a full-scale needs assessment in which we'd like to assess the needs of upwards of 50 individuals across different modalities, both group and individual interviews. That could pose challenges, of course, with that population, but a COLA, which could have, you know, anywhere between, like, I don't know, 5 and 25 folks, is very doable as far as I'm concerned. It would take some work and some collaborating partners, but we could propose, we don't need to vote on the COLA targets at the full council meeting, so we wouldn't have to vote on it, but this committee can choose to have the homeless / unhoused population be a COLA target. Does anyone disagree with that?
No, I think it's a great idea.
All right. Would someone at the full council meeting be willing to make a motion to approve Black / African-American as the needs assessment target for 2024?
Sure, I will.
Okay, great. Then
just remind me.
Okay, well, I'll remind you. And because this is a recommendation only, because we don't have quorum, I'll just put it out there. Any opposed to the choosing of the Black / African-American population as a target for the 2024 needs assessment? All right, no one opposed, and I will remind you, Lee, and hopefully someone will second it as well.
And it looks like unhoused peoples will be our COLA?
Yeah, that doesn't need to get approved by the full council. You all have just now determined that that will be our COLA population. I mean, excellent. Our COLA.
Excellent, and thank you, Lee, for what you're going to do at the council meeting.
Do we need to kind of define unhoused at all?
We can do that in further meetings. Absolutely. Kira can put the agenda for next month or the month after, depending on when we decide to do the COLA. We'd want your help in this.
Great. Sounds good. Thank you.
Because, I mean, as everyone knows, both homeless and unhoused, which are, I think, different but overlapping terms, can be a very broad definition, including folks who are in transitional facilities, couch surfing, all, like in SROs. So the more specificity, the better, I think, for a COLA target. Less so for a needs assessment. For a COLA target, yes.
Great. Perfect. Thank you.
Excellent. So that takes care of needs assessment. Now we'll do the update.
Yeah. And so for this month's update, I actually have the presentation on needs assessment, as well as part of that towards the end. I can just share my screen. Will be the COLA report back from the past one we did. So can everyone see this? I can't see you all.
Yes, we can see it.
Okay. All right, so this is the presentation that we've put together. And so our target group for 2023 was Latino, Latina, Latinx. And so this just goes over some background on this slide. And so who the outreach efforts were led by, how many participants we had, as well as what the incentive was, where the surveys took place and the discussions took place. Then this is the overview. So just the overview of the rest of the presentation, including the demographic data that we pulled from participant surveys, our findings, and then conclusion and recommendations. Let me see actually. Oh, give me 1 second. This is not the updated one. Sorry. Let me stop screen sharing and find it really quick. I sent you the updated one, right, Mark?
Mark had to, they had to shut down their computer.
Oh, never mind. Sorry.
You're all frozen up too, Kira, just so you know.
Oh, I am frozen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Now you're back.
Okay. I think it's because I'm looking through my email. Sorry, let me just find it really quick. I think it's this one. All right. Yeah, I found it. It's the same thing, just it has the updated COLA slides at the end. All right. All right, now can everyone see this?
We can. Yes.
All right, perfect. All right, so following the conclusions and recommendations, I will go over the COLA report back, which is what we found just from the participants that we did survey. So here are some slides regarding the data, and I'll kind of go through this presentation a little quick, just because you'll see it at the full council more in depth. So just more data slides.
And sorry, how many people were in? 50?
52. We had 52, a total of 52 folks.
Great, okay.
That were surveyed, yeah. Thanks. So a really big jump from last year's needs assessment. Go going back to this slide, I just wanted to highlight this specific question that we asked on the survey, because it was actually David Gonzalez last year who asked us, when we were asking people if they were engaged with medical care or not, if we had asked them why they may not have. And so I thought it was a really important question, and would give us a lot of good insight. And so we did have a couple of people that answered that and gave us their explanation or their reasoning as to why they were not engaged with medical care. And then we did the service category ranking. And we discussed that with folks. And this part in the blue is just, we mostly got for primary medical care, we got a lot of, and in this needs assessment specifically from this community, we got a lot of good positive feedback from the with their engagement of the system of care. And so these were just some, things that could be improved. And so that's why that's a different color. And then we have quotes on the right-hand side. Here we talked about dental care, food, and quotes on the right-hand side. And then this portion is a little different from the service category discussion. It was still a discussion that we had with folks. But during this portion, we asked questions regarding barriers to access and just the general quality of life folks had. And so there was a lot of good discussion there. And this is that continued. And some quotes. And that brings us to the conclusion. So just the main takeaway from everything that was presented earlier. And that'll bring us to the recommendations, which we actually wanted to ask this group their thoughts and any suggestions on recommendations. I'll go back to this section. So I'll read a little bit of this. Benefits was an area of concern for this population. Specifically, a lot of folks, these groups were held in Spanish only. So that was, they were all facilitated in Spanish and all of the folks were monolingual speaking. So a big issue that folks described was having access to information in Spanish. So there was an evident language barrier when trying to figure and find more information about benefits. Dental care was also a challenging service category, as well as primary care was an important service to folks. But there was a fast turnover of medical staff and that posed a challenge as folks then had to transition over to a new healthcare provider. And it was just having to explain their ailments once, like starting all over again. And that was a big challenge for folks. So for the recommendations portion, we wanted your feedback and your suggestions on what we could to address those concerns.
So yeah, thank you, Kira. Actually, before we even have this discussion, I want to just thank you, Kira, and by extension, Crown as well, who's not here, just for putting together a great needs assessment. Like, we're back. It's been a couple years where we've had like kind of piddly needs assessments because of challenges around the pandemic. You know, we're used to having upwards of 50 folks, and we've had, I'd say, far less numbers for our last few needs assessments. So it's just so wonderful that we're actually back to our normal scope. And all of that is due to Kira and Crown. I helped like such a small amount on this. It really is Kira and Crown who deserve all the recognition of being back on track. So thank you. And thank you, Crown, who will also be appearing again at the council to co-present with Kira. So I just want to acknowledge your great work. That said, okay, so we're hoping to have some suggestions from you all about dental and about housing. I'm just, we can come up with them, I suppose, but it'd be great to get suggestions from you all. Looks like Thomas has their hand up.
Thank you. Sorry, Kirk, can you go back to the first slide?
Yeah. The background information?
That's not the word. Hold on.
COLA, she has yet to go over the COLA portion.
Great. In that case, never mind. Other than the fact that just with this particular population, I don't know if you got English as a first language or a second language. I think people might be interested in that out of the 52 individuals.
Oh, okay. Whether they, oh, so this was, I think, did I put it? No, I didn't. Okay, yes. I'll add that.
And Instituto de la Raza has a little typo on that, just noticed.
Which one?
Oh, yeah. Oh. Take out that first I.
Mm-hmm. There you go. And is the recommendations for clients, like the pamphlet that was one of the things, or for agencies?
The pamphlet? These recommendations are for HHS to do with as they see fit, as you all see fit. Sometimes, mm-hmm. like, recommendations have led, obviously, to, mm-hmm. I think a recommendation from the council led to the hard copy of the resource guide many, 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 many years ago. Also led to the creation of support groups, creation of lockers for homeless mm-hmm. folks. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they've been used by HHS as like, okay, well, here's our carry forward allocation because of a recommendation. We're going to do this with this part of the money. So it's really up to you. As everyone knows, we don't really have, we have the authority to make these recommendations, but no authority to force compliance. It's entirely mm-hmm. up to HIV Health Services mm-hmm. And what you all find to be doable. So for example, that first recommendation, that could be something that HHS decides to do themselves or contracts out or actually just asks agencies to do. It's really up to you all. You know, a recommendation about housing, for example, could be even just almost like a generic recommendation around, it is recommended that housing providers include bilingual staff. You know, it could be something like that. For dental, it could actually connect with what Stephen had, and I see the hands for sure, which Stephen mentioned around, you know, the council recommends that HHS and contract program managers be fully informed of the different challenges that clients are experiencing with this service. You know, it could be, doesn't need to be a specific like dollar amount attached kind of recommendation or specific modality or intervention that we're asking for. It could be just the whole, like, whatever the gamut might be as far as what we've seen in these folks' responses. So I saw first Thomas and then Lee. Oh, no, Thomas, we already answered your question. Sorry, you were just still in my head. You just have an apartment up there. Lee.
Well, I love these kind of recommendations. I'm curious to hear from, like, Maria and Thomas about what they, how they feel about these recommendations, and kind of give a little more context in terms of, based on this, the results from this, where do you see HHS kind of stepping in and helping bridge the gaps that the clients are telling us?
So I know with HHS, one of the things is, you know, training of programs. And that's one thing that I've started trying to restart again for, you know, we had that happening before. And definitely, I did hear from providers, which aligns with this needs assessment, which is wanting to learn more about the needs of the Latinx clients, and especially like with, I think there has a rise of HIV positive in the Latinx community this last, I think the Epi report showed that as well this last year. So that's something that I am actually currently working on, you know, trying to find trainers that are equipped to provide training to service providers. I know that there was also a training that PRC did on benefits and, you know, specifically with Latinx clients. So it could be, you know, asking what resources they already have from some of the trainings that they have had and making sure that everyone has access to that. So that's something that comes to mind when I saw the first one. The other two, you know, definitely housing. I think that's a challenge that everybody is having. And I think even with some of our service providers, sometimes there is availability, but there's still a breakdown in terms of how quickly they can move people in, is what I'm hearing lately. So, you know, I think that it could be just how people are applying for it and just making sure that they have all their applications and everything in place, because I think there's just a long process, it seems like, to be able to be housed is what I'm hearing. So maybe more information on that. And I guess maybe Manuel can offer some suggestions on that too with the MOCD that he works with. But so that's some of the ideas that come to mind with me, but I don't know if Thomas wants to share and others.
No, I think that was pretty comprehensive. I feel like the one that we have most access to is number one. And so we do fund FOG, and they're really good about kind of helping people with regards to kind of what they call the boot camp space and being familiar with regards to information on resources and insurance processes. There has been a lot of energy just as a whole to kind of coordinating resources. It just seems to be resource list after resource list after resource list. So we're trying to wrap our minds around how to best coordinate all the resource lists. So just to put that out there, that's definitely on Chet's kind of agenda moving forward. And also just to kind of acknowledge that we're working with IFR to do a collective impact approach with regards to the current disparities for men who have sex with men, obviously specifically Latino, and what that is about, just due to the fact that 2023 data, it was the only group that actually had a movement up, and everybody else had kind of movements in the other direction. So we want to respond.
Richard, if you don't, were you finished? No.
Well, and then the other piece is we're actually working with the East Bay getting to zero and the San Francisco getting to zero to put on a one-day event that is just coming together specifically for Spanish-speaking staff that work with monolingual Spanish-speaking clients to kind of support that staff and try to figure out what the workforce needs are. Because there's always an additional burden on that staff, and the reflection of what's happening within the community and the community members is kind of coming through with regards to high turnover and staff being burdened more so just due to their bilingualality, if that's a word. So go for it, Mark.
All right. So if Richard, if you don't mind, if I jump in before you and Stephen to respond to what Maria and Thomas said, because I heard at least one strong additional recommendation that we could put in there. But before we get to that, you know, I think like when you look at that first recommendation, that's like an ideal place that could potentially be used for carry forward funds. Like HHS could easily say, like, we set this amount and have asked this provider to put together a Spanish language resource guide. They could clearly, there's like one or more agencies they could approach. We've done these kinds of things in the past with carry forward funds. It would just have to be approved by HRSA, of course, as all carry forward funding allocation needs to be. But so that to me seems super doable. So I would definitely keep that recommendation as is. I would just add, Kira, create a Spanish language informational packet, since that's specifically what I feel like I'm hearing from the consumers of this survey, and that they need benefit support. And, you know, this was a monolingual group, so I think that will be good. And then that's something that HHS can consider for carry forward funding. That's not under any particular service category. I mean, it is. Benefits is obviously under non-medical case management, but that's like adding money to that service category is something that we don't necessarily do based on these recommendations. It's much more around carry forward dollars. So that's doable for sure. For the second recommendation, I'm wondering if we want to even just remove the housing altogether. We're going to have a housing presentation from Manuel this year. We also have a housing COLA that you all just set. So we actually might get more nuance on there. But I did hear an excellent recommendation to replace it. It's not housing based, but from Maria, which is that HHS continues to support service provider trainings to educate them on the Latino AX populations. How does that sound for folks? And that's something that's not necessarily not just happening already, but clearly that's something that's important based on what Maria said as far as interest from providers. It's a, I think, an easy recommendation and also a good one. It's not just like, you know, BS.
I think it's
okay, great. So if I recall, Richard, you had your hand up first, and then Thomas, and then Lee.
No, I was just going to say, the dental. I'm part of the Healthcare for the Homeless co-applicant board with Bill Bloom, and we've had dedicated meetings to discussions about that, and that's really like a tough problem. But some of the things we talked about were like lowering the barriers to care, so dedicated clinics, expanding hours. There's waiting room issues about maybe, you know, the demographic that would be going into the waiting rooms with their possessions and luggage and things, maybe expanding visiting rooms, visiting hours, and just the whole process. Dental visits take longer than medical visits usually, and there's an x-ray process and checking out their past records, and if there was just some ways to streamline that. That's all. I just wanted to say that we have been talking about that. It's definitely a difficult situation.
Yeah. You know, I think actually Stephen had his hand up before Thomas and Lee. So Stephen?
So I put them in the chat, and I know that other folks mentioned it too. Andy Scheer does have some really handy guides that, they're really cool. They're on his like email tag, and they link to Google documents that he seems to update pretty regularly. And I give these to clients all the time. They could benefit from being translated. So that might be the goal. And I'm not entirely sure what something like that for housing would look like. It would be much more confusing. but yeah, so I just wanted to share that.
Great. Thomas and Lee?
That's perfect. So part of me is thinking if we want a recommendation could be that the HCPC is just updated with the collective impact.
Can you say that again? I didn't hear that last one.
That you all are just updated with our collective impact approach for the Latino population that we're going to be doing over the next 6 months. So that might be a simple recommendation with regards to what the findings are. So we're working with IFR, and they're going to pull together a group of folks, Latino providers specifically, to kind of look at what's going on with regards to the current disparity with HIV acquisition. So
okay.
It's not really care related, so it's a little bit of a, you know, care prevention world's kind of coming together, but it's something that we're doing, and we want to share it out with you anyways. So if you all ask for it, it'll be easier for but we can justify us showing up in that space to make that happen.
Okay, that could be a fourth recommendation. It's not necessarily an impact based, obviously. It's much more process based, and it's not care related. So it which is outside of the jurisdiction of this care mandated needs assessment. But it sounds important to me, and it's also an easy, you know, an easy one. Not that we should be leading with easy. Kira, can you reach out to Thomas and maybe get more specific language from them at, you know, at some point after this meeting, just to add that fourth recommendation that the council receive the impact findings from I'm not sure what you call it, a study, survey, report that they're doing in collaboration with Instituto?
Mm-hmm. I can.
Lee Jewell.
I'm constantly reminded that when we get results of surveys like this, that clients are often left in the dark about information. And so this idea of collecting information and having all available sources collected into one source or one kind of go-to space is really encouraging. And I can't stress enough how that would positively impact the life of clients trying to navigate the care continuum. So keeping up on that is really important. And I'm wondering if we need to put all of these recommendations or client suggestions into one space that we can constantly refer back to. And see if there's any overlapping concerns. So at the end of each COLA and or session that we do with clients that we're a little bit clear about what clients are really asking for and kind of collate it all together. And then secondly, I think it's really important that all of this information is shared with FOG because they deal directly with social workers and people that are working with clients and trying to get that information. So there needs to be a really robust feedback loop so they're aware of what's going on. Thank you.
I think it's a very, I mean, that's not a recommendation for this particular needs assessment, but I think that's a very interesting idea. I think we did that maybe even pre-merge, where I think I did that, or maybe I worked with Enrique to do that, which was to create a document which actually showed all the different conclusions and recommendations across multiple needs assessments and COLAs, so that, like you said, Lee, it's sort of all in one place and can be like just sort of a repository of information that can be consulted as need be and disseminated as need be. I could work on that with Kira. I don't mind taking the lead on that. Maybe at some point even presenting to the council. I think that would just be really interesting to see over, like, say, the past 5 years, even though, of course, we'll have much smaller sample sizes during the pandemic years. Have we left those years? I don't know. But we could, certainly put that together. And like I just said, I think that would be interesting for folks to see, especially to see if there's overlap and if there's like distinct conclusions as well.
Right.
But and it'd be interesting on, the overlap, you know.
It would be based on, it'd be interesting to see based on each community where the information gap is.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is something that HHS can always continue to refer to as well. For referral purposes when they're looking at what they need to accomplish.
Yeah, yeah. The more I think about this, the more I like it. I can see tasking myself with this project. Okay. So let me think more about this, and maybe I'll even bring it back to the group to discuss further. But that's a very interesting suggestion.
And it needs to be made available to Andy and Fogg so they can reference it as well.
So I'll have to lift my block sender from Andy then. Okay. Yeah, that's a great suggestion, of course. Make sure it's disseminated to the provider community as well. All right, so let's get back to the dental care recommendations. I think there's been some folks who spoke on this, but we still don't have a recommendation. How do folks feel about my recommendation of a recommendation, which was simply to create kind of like an info pipeline so that HHS feels empowered to talk to the program manager or to the service provider. I'm not sure. I mean, Kira and I can sort of figure that out. But, kind of like to reference back to what Steven said about the role of HCAP, much like HCAP, Planning Council is not a punitive agency. It's not an agency that's going to be like calling out other agencies, hopefully. But I think this is important information. Like, I think that the dental provider should know what challenges their clients are experiencing, and they should know where the client communities feel there are gaps, and plus who doesn't want to hear what other people are saying about them? And so how do folks feel about that kind of a recommendation that HHS share information with service provider, or whatever, we can come up with something, but I think you know what I'm talking about, just kind of creating an informational pipeline that is not even an informational pipeline. It could literally be sharing HCAP reports and this needs assessment, literally. It doesn't need to be a heavy lift from HHS or from us. What do you think about that, Maria?
I'm just concerned about putting that as a recommendation based off of this Latinx. I think that that is something that we can discuss. And again, I can bring that back to Bill. I know that, if there was like issues that come up with the HCAP and, with a certain provider that is the same thing happening over there has happened in the past where there are, meetings that take place. And like you said, so I don't think that that's never not happened. I think that it's just, I don't know if I would put that down for this specifically needs assessment or recommendation.
Okay, I hear you for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas and Lee.
I think he was first.
Lee, then Thomas.
Let's see. I love the idea of being able to take the information that we get back from the needs assessment and the COLAs in a kind of a feedback loop that gets responded to. The problem I think it makes the needs assessments and the COLAs more effective in terms of making sure that clients' grievances and or concerns are being addressed. I mean, because we keep seeing the same stuff over and over again. It astounds me that clients don't know about dental, and there's only two providers, right, that are providing services and that people don't know about it. That's crazy to me. So making the results from the needs assessments and the COLAs more of a information exchange and a feedback loop that we're constantly updating and getting feedback from providers and HHS, I think is an awesome thing.
Thomas?
Great. So Lee, just to acknowledge, somebody did some graffiti there on your name.
What are you?
Some graffiti on the bottom of Lee's name, MAFT113 something or other. So
that's my AMFT number. I'm an associate marriage and family therapist.
Thomas, I think you're forgetting the feedback you received at steering last month.
You're out the other. I agree with what Maria was saying with regards to associating this with the Latino population specifically. But Mark, I do like the idea of a feedback loop specifically with the work Stephen does. And is there any confidentiality on either end? Like if someone were to read some of the, are we talking about like sharing what we're seeing?
It's all, number one, it's fully confidential. There's no client names across either the HCAP reports or the needs assessment. And these are all public meetings anyway, recorded and disseminated. What we could do to soften sort of what I mentioned, while considering certainly that what Maria said as far as like, well, actually these are happening, they are getting information, is, I mean, I guess I'll ask Maria specifically, how about a recommendation that we simply share the results with HHS, who could share it with the service providers? That way, either the people who created these, like Kira and Steven, or you or whoever else could just say, you know, this is a sample size, but these are the reports that have been shared publicly, and it's important that you all just see what has been said. How do you feel about that, Maria?
So what you're saying is based on the previous recommendations and whatever recommendations, like what has HHS done in the past? Is that what you're saying? Like communicating?
Oh, no. No, not at all. Not at all. No,
you're talking about specific cases that have come up.
Simply sharing. Yeah. Simply sharing the HCAP reports, or Steve is not comfortable. I mean, simply sharing the needs assessment results and HCAP, unless Stephen is uncomfortable sharing the HCAP. Again, these are documents that are shared publicly, so I personally don't see why there would be an issue with that, but I'm not Stephen. But I can speak on behalf of the council support. You know, we post these needs assessments on our website, so anyone can see it literally across the country. So mm-hmm. A recommendation that says share this with HHS, who can share this with the service provider, seems like hopefully would not... I mean, would be interesting and hopefully mm-hmm. useful for the service provider, but also wouldn't necessarily rock the boat. We know the challenges with at least one of those service providers. You know, it's a teaching agency. There's so many different things mm-hmm. going on. So we know all that. We don't necessarily need to keep on kicking that horse. But, you know, people should know if their agency is being noted in public documents. So does that seem reasonable to you?
I think so. I mean, like, I think... that I know Steven shares the report with us directly, and I think that we get one with the name of the provider, right, Steven, if I'm correct?
That's correct. That's
the So I think that, you know, I can take that back to Bill, because, you know, I know that in the past, like I said, there have been things that have come up where there needs to be, you know, follow-up done, and I can talk to him about how he feels about that. But I think I don't see a problem with it myself, you know, sharing that documentation.
Okay, great. Kira, I'll connect with you about, I'll come to you in a moment, Stephen. I'll connect with you, Kira, about the language about that.
Yeah.
Stephen?
I was just going to mention, first of all, I had no objection to the document that I draft being shared with anyone. In fact, I'm planning to make some changes to how I word things, because it seems a little boring, but
So it's I'm more,
I like neutral.
but so maybe it'll inspire me to be more creative. But, you know, that's all time dependent, obviously. I do want to say it might be beneficial for somebody from the council to share to share those things with service providers directly, encouraging them to attend the meetings.
That could be done to attend the meetings, but to share, I would hate for the council to be perceived as coming down on an individual service provider. That's literally not what we're allowed to do.
Right.
HHS/DPH is always supposed to be intermediary. So I would just be hesitant to do that for sure.
Gotcha.
Yeah. It's like separation of church and state.
Such as it is.
Yeah, right.
Can I just kind of note just like what we said about the dental thing, for example? There's two providers, right? Is what I understood. So for somebody reading that, they have a 50-50 chance if they know who those two providers are. So I am not opposed. I just want to share, like, I remember hearing once somebody said, like, two pieces of information about somebody. They said their age and the state that they had just arrived from. And I'm like, I know who that person is. And Mark, my own naiveness, I actually never thought about the fact that what we share in these meetings from Stephen is public record. So obviously we've done that for a while. There's been no harm or foul, but I just wanted to kind of share that kind of concern. Although I see the benefit of being transparent with regards to the quality of the services that we're funding. So, cool.
Absolutely. I mean, I've seen that with Stephen, actually. That's why I actually just lauded neutrality, because neutrality leads to hopefully at least some level of not just calling out, but also some level of anonymity as well. So what I've seen is, and maybe if just Stephen can continue with this, is that almost like broad description. So no one's name is given, but also not a whole lot of identifying factors are. And so that could be continued. Like saying someone is out of state is certainly different from saying someone just came over from Austin, Texas, or like saying someone is in their 50s or is a senior is different than saying someone is 63. You know what I mean? So I think there's always gonna be a chance that people can put clues together, but I think as long as Stephen maintains that sort of broad generalization, we do have to have some specificity, broad specificity, if that's a word, some identifying factors to better understand the challenges that Stephen's portraying, if that makes sense. Yeah. All right.
Oh. I'm good. Thank you for hearing that.
Kira, do you feel like you have what you need? Well, you still will be reaching out to Thomas and talking with me, but do you feel like you have what you need to actually have our four recommendations?
Yeah, I think, we even have four. So I think we can definitely move forward.
Back to you.
All right. So now I'll go ahead and move on to the second portion, which is just the report back from the COLA that we did, which was people affected by eviction. Unfortunately, it was a small sample size of 5 participants. I didn't include in these next slides any data pulled from the surveys because it's just such a small sample size. I'd rather focus on the actual discussions that we had with those folks. And so I just picked some themes that came out of that discussion, and obviously, housing was a top theme that came out of that. So I included some of what, like a summed up version of what folks discussed and openly shared with us, as well as some quotes here at the bottom. And then that discussion continued. Another theme was benefits, and that kind of went hand in hand with housing. And again, some quotes here at the bottom. And then just a conclusion of, I wanted to pull some things out of, there was a lot that folks talked about. And so I wanted to pull some key things away from that conversation. And so again, just anxiety around benefits and transitioning away from that And that's like a common theme I think we've heard from previous Colas and Eats assessment, as well as housing conditions, going more specifically, just general safety that folks described. And so that would be the end of the presentation then. That would take us to the end.
I have a couple of things. I really should have just emailed them to you when I first looked this over, but hey, we're here together here, so I might as well just give them now. They're just super minor. Take out AARP and put in legal services.
I can just do that right now, actually.
Yeah, so that we don't specify the agency.
Okay.
Yeah. And then on 18, I just saw a typo. On 18, it should be SROs without the apostrophe. Told you, minor.
Okay.
Looks like I guess you can't see it. Richard has his hand up.
Oh yeah. Sorry, I can't see anyone.
So this COLA was on evictions, youth, and African American Black?
No, eviction only. Okay. Youth is still in process. Where that's been a long journey. We haven't lost youth. And remember, African American has now been switched from COLA to needs assessment. So this is purely folks experiencing eviction.
I think you've lost youth.
Say again?
I think you've lost youth.
I'm always seeking youth because I'm emotionally immature.
The only thing I was going to say is just the word COLA. Every time I think we use that acronym, somebody asks what it is. So just spelling that out.
We usually, so for our COLA, when we present on our COLA, we usually have one slide that explains kind of the difference between the needs assessment and the COLA. So what COLA does and what we're trying to gain from it. So I can include that slide as well. Would that be beneficial then?
I think so, especially for the numbers.
Yeah, same for me. I always want to say cost of living when I see
COLA. Oh yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. Here's our cost of living allocation presentation. No conflict there.
Anything else?
I know this is nitpicky, but on slide 19, that font is hard to read, the color.
Oh, this one? Okay, I can change
it. Or whatever. Or,
you don't like teal? What do you have against teal?
Teal on white is hard to see on a screen in the back of the room.
I can just change it to match that. It doesn't have to be different.
Great, thanks.
I can change this one too.
Good job, by the way. It looked a lot of work.
Okay. Anything else before I stop sharing my screen?
Thanks again.
All right.
That's it, Kira?
Yep.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks, everyone. Mark, I believe it's time for adjournment. Yeah. Great to see everyone again. And our next community engagement meeting is on March 6th via Zoom. Be well, everyone.
So just when Mark kind of gives that stern, like, show up to meetings rhetoric at the next full council meeting, we all exempt. We can sit there smugly knowing that we showed up, most of us, on time.
You are the good ones. You are the good ones. You
might call that out when you're doing your finger.
I don't like praising people, so forget about it. Just consider it done.
Push outside your box.
All right. Oh, God.
Richard, thank you. Ed Chitty, where you heading? Duck hunting? You okay?
Oh, yes.
Morning, off.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.